Bugatti invited him over to his home for dinner and was so put off by the gentleman's manners during dinner that he told him he would refuse to build him the car because he wasn't worthy of driving a Bugatti.
Welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. I, as always, am your host, Garrick Van Buren. On each First Crack Podcast, I like to bring you an interesting conversation. And today, for the 51st conversation on the First Crack Podcast, we are going to try something new. We're going to kick off a six-part series with the partners and staff of the Minneapolis law firm Parson & Kaplan, Rosberg & Gottlieb. We're going to be talking with the people there about their non-law passions, the things that have been with them their entire life. And today, to kick it off, we are speaking with managing partner Howard Rubin on his love of cars. He just got back from the style, Speed, Style, and Beauty cars from the Ralph Lauren collection exhibit at the Boston Museum of Fine Art. And we talk about the cars he saw there and the cars that have stuck with him his entire life. So I hope you enjoy it. Let me know. Leave me an email, firstcrack@gmail.com, or drop a comment on the website, firstcrackpodcast.com. Okay, let's get started. Howard, tell me about your all-time favorite vehicle.
Ooh, that's tough. I've always liked the Rolls-Royce Corniche, which is the two-door convertible. Thought that was a very classy car. For a more luxurious roadster and Jaguar XKEs when I was growing up, that was the hot. That was something I had a passion for too. So,
your father has been in cars since, you were saying, since the '40s, between used and a Dodge and a Toyota dealership. Of all those cars, was there a favorite that you had growing up?
Well, when the Dodge Challenger first came out, I was just about probably 14 or 15, looking forward to getting my license at 16. So I thought that was the coolest car that there could be. I was very loyal to the family line, brand of cars. So I coveted that at an early age and actually had the opportunity to drive one for a while. Now, back then, in the 60s, there were some quality issues with the Dodge and Chrysler products. I think they've come a long way, and they obviously have improved their product considerably. But at that time, growing up, it wasn't that cool to have your dad in the Dodge business. Would have been more cool to perhaps have had a General Motors franchise at the time, because those were the more hot cars. I didn't care. I had a car. I was 16. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah.
You've just returned from the Speed, Style, and Beauty exhibit at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, showcasing 17 vehicles from Ralph Lauren's personal collection.
Well, it was fabulous. It was nothing that I expected. I don't know what I was expecting. I've been to car shows, excuse me, I've been to car museums or I've seen other car collections, but I think and I know that they purposely focused on the artistic side of the automobiles, and so even the way they were displayed within the museum gave you the feeling that you were looking at art, not that you were looking at an automobile, although this art piece was functional and had another purpose. It was, they were displayed in a way to accentuate the style and the artistic talent that went into designing the cars. That was fascinating. I mean, to me, that was really, yeah, the way it was positioned on the platform, the way it was, yeah, the lighting, and then the only, and all the walls and everything were white. So all you saw was this, you know, automobile. It was just very stark setting to, again, accentuate with the lighting the stylistic beauty of each of these vehicles. The only other aspect of the experience or of the exhibit is that they had large flat screen TVs that were showing videos, but the videos were to show that every car that was in the exhibit was in working order and is driven, and is, and so they had video tape of each one of the cars being driven by someone, usually in a beautiful setting in a countryside or whatever, and there were sound effects so that you could hear the rev of the engine and get the sensation and the feel of the speed of these cars, because so many of them are designed as race cars. So that added to the excitement. I mean, you really felt like you were looking at this car, and then you could hear what it sounded like, and you could see that it really is driven. So it wasn't an old artifact. It was a functional piece of beautiful art. Most of the cars predate mass production of automobiles. So there were a number of these. I believe Ralph Lauren has maybe 60 or 70 cars, and these were the choice pick of the collection. But there were a number of cars where there were only two or three made, and no two are alike because they were handmade. So you could see in the structure, in the way the car was put together, that they weren't perfect. Mm-hmm. And so the handmade aspect of it was evident, and yet just incredibly beautiful and well done. So they're very, very rare. Some of them are very, very rare cars. And then the cars that were built later, again, they weren't. There were a couple of, at the McLaren is a mass-produced car, but they didn't produce a whole lot of them. I had the luxury and the pleasure of meeting Darcy Coronan, who was the curator of the exhibit, and he took my wife and I through the exhibit. So for the average guy who loves cars walking through, I don't know that they would have gotten or had the same experience that I had, because he was able to fill me in on a lot of the details, background, history, etc. Darcy, apparently, he's originally from South Dakota. Apparently, his true expertise is in rare musical instruments, and he was brought to the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston to develop their musical instrument exhibit, and this was just a side project for him. Not a small project. He invested 2 years in developing the exhibit, developing a book that goes with the exhibit and the videos, etc. He got to know, apparently, Ralph Lauren quite well, probably Ralph's restorer better than Ralph himself. I've forgotten the restorer's name, but he lives outside of Boston, and he has restored all of the cars that are owned in this collection. It was interesting that my wife accompanied me, and she does not share the same passion for automobiles. It's not in her genes like it is for me. She loved the experience. So this was coming from someone who wouldn't necessarily, I mean, she didn't go kicking and screaming, but she wasn't all excited about going. And yet, I think the appreciation for the beauty of these vehicles, that the artistic value, and was what impressed us the most. You know, we were looking at these cars as we might look at any other piece of art in an exhibit, and I also didn't realize that he had examples of cars that were so rare, you know. I think those were things that really stood out for both of us. The one that they featured in the cover of the book and on a lot of the different things that they sold related is a Bugatti, and it was a 1938 Bugatti. It's a Type 575C coupe. It was just incredible. And what I found interesting about that is these cars were, you know, they would, I don't even know what process they went through, you know, in the bending and shaping of this steel, but they would put the coach, the body together in pieces, and then they would rivet the pieces together. And so if you see a picture of this car, you'll see that where they brought the car, where they brought the pieces together and riveted it together, they kept the rivets in because they thought that where the pieces came together and the rivets make a ridge that rise up, that added to the style of the car. So when you look at it, if you didn't know that the function of that line in the car was as a result of putting it together with rivets, you would have thought they designed this car to have this really cool looking trim all the way around it. And I loved that car. I thought that was an incredible car. There was more than one that I could have just gone crazy for. I will say, though, of the different lines, and there were Mercedes and Porsches and Ferraris and the McLaren, the Bugattis, there were a couple of them. Those were, to me, the most incredible. And he told us a story about how finicky Mr. Bugatti was, because back in the days prior to mass production, you had to be quite well-to-do to commission someone to build you a car, and obviously he was considered one of the best. He did tell one story about a very rich gentleman who had commissioned him to build a car, and he invited him over, Bugatti invited him over to his home for dinner, and was so put off by the gentleman's manners during dinner that he told him he would refuse to build him the car because he wasn't worthy of driving a Bugatti. And so there was a real snobbery and nobility aspect to who had access to cars like this. First you had to have the money, but then even if you overcame that hurdle, if the designer didn't think that you were worthy, obviously they were in demand and they had discretion. So I was probably more taken by the stories about him and the two cars that were in the exhibit. I would love to have either one of those cars. I have in front of me, unfortunately the people listening can't see this, but they published a book on the exhibit. We should probably talk a little bit about that because there was controversy about the whole thing. The commercialization of this exhibit. I think this is the other one. Oh. But yeah, I do have a picture of it. And here it is.
Oh.
And this picture really doesn't do it justice because you have to see it. Each of these cars, and I think, again, going back to what I said earlier, the way it was displayed on the platform, and you had the ability to get a 360 view of the car, as you worked away your way around the car, each vantage point and viewpoint gave you a whole different feel about the car. And that's what I thought was very cool. The book is great because it has all the highlights of all of the cars. I think it goes beyond even those that were in the exhibit, and it might have a few pictures of cars that, because I didn't see this old station wagon with the wood panels on the side.
Okay.
That would be a Willys Jeep, which this is actually when my dad started in the car business. He started by selling Willys Jeeps on Lake Street. And so I learned about Willys back when I was quite young. So some of these, the Jeep or the Woody station wagon, the 48 Ford Woody station, those weren't in the exhibit, but they were included in the book.
Okay.
There's the McLaren. Unbelievable. It's just...
It's a stunning
it's
vehicle.
Amazing. Amazing. Apparently, the manager, or I don't know, general manager, I'm not exactly sure what the title is, of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston was criticized for using this exhibit as a way in which to raise money for his museum, because the real purists like art for art's sake. and certainly putting Ralph Lauren's name on it, they were helping brand him, and that was going to be a draw for the public. So to those who are purists, it was distasteful that he was using this as a marketing opportunity to draw more attention to his museum. One of the things that Darcy had mentioned was that during the course of the 2 years in putting in the collection together, he got numerous calls from car collectors who claimed to have had, you know, the perfect specimen of certain cars and wanted to have their cars in the exhibit. And they thought that it made sense and that it would be more effective to pick a collection like Ralph Lauren's collection. It would be easier to explain to those who were vying for position that, no, we're just going, this is one collection from one individual, and we're sticking to that. And then, of course, the whole marketing of the exhibit and the books and all the paraphernalia that went with it that they were selling, that also, I think, maybe didn't sit well with the more traditionalists. The book is available at any Ralph Lauren store around the world. You know, whether you ever see the exhibit or not. Before I heard about the whole controversy over that, I just thought, well, gee, that makes sense. This is a gentleman who is into style and design, and he probably uses this to give him inspiration for some of his other designs, which, in fact, Darcy did mention that was the case. And so I didn't think of it in terms of, well, let's milk Ralph Lauren's brand. But I guess there were some that felt that way.
And Howard, off the subject just a tad, what do you drive?
I drive a Mercedes CLK 500, which I got about a year and a half ago, and I love it. Beautiful styling, very fast. I think the style and design, just personally, that's more important to me than the speed. I like to have a car that can go fast, but the reality is some of these cars have the ability to perform beyond any opportunity I would ever even have to, without getting a ticket, to use. But it's nice to have that power behind you. I was drawn to this car, though, because of its styling. I just thought it was a beautiful car. One of my favorite cars that I owned was a BMW M Roadster when they went and created their two-door Roadster, kind of retro-looking. Before, in my opinion, they ruined it when the Z4 came out. This was a Z3, but it had a bigger engine, so it was an M Roadster. That just meant it was faster. Two-door convertible that I loved. But knowing that my son also had a love for cars and speed and design, when he turned 16, I sold it. I had been advised by many friends, family, others, you don't want to have that car around when your kid gets his driver's license. So I sold it, thought that that was the wise thing to do. I miss it. He knows I miss it. So it was one. He appreciates the sacrifice his father made. He did wind up getting a car of his own, but I loved that car, and I miss it. So that's one of the many sacrifices you make for your children, I guess. Someday I'll get something back that I can enjoy. But when I used to drive that car, and of course here in Minnesota it had a limited season, I just felt better. I mean, I just loved getting in that car and driving. It just made me feel good. Young, too, which was nice. And when I got the Mercedes, my wife was thinking I was getting old, and till she saw it and also has been a passenger in it and knows that this is not an old person's car, but she had this image. in her mind that I was going to get old and heavy and sedentary and drive one of those big Mercedes tanks, and that's not what this car is.
Thank you for sharing your passion for cars with me today.
Thank you.
Comments at firstcrack@gmail.com or at the website firstcrackpodcast.com. This has been Garrick. That'll do it for today.